Hello, hello, and welcome to the Christmas special of Tomorrow Never Knows. I'm Emma London.
I'm Charlotte Lydia Riley.
And this is a departure from our normal schedule of talking about women and things. And this is our Mad Men special.
Yes.
Why are we talking about Mad Men?
We're talking about Mad Men. Well, we're going to talk about women and Mad Men. I feel like there are so many things to talk about women in Mad Men anyway, yeah. That we'll probably end up doing both. We're talking about Mad Men because this is the one of the things that unites us.
Yes.
Not just our research interests or our kind of political outlooks or our broadly similar perspective on life, but Mad Men is one of the things that we have in common.
I think we could basically have a fist fight over who is the most Peggy.
Yes, I think so. I think, you know, there is a certain woman, type of woman who watched Mad Men and had sort of fiercely emotionally identified with Peggy from the beginning to the end, and I was definitely that sort of woman.
I feel very protective over Peggy.
Oh my god, yes. I'm sure there are people who watched it and identified with Don or
poor guys.
Yeah, or with Joan. And I'm in awe of women who watched it and identified with Joan.
But, or Megan.
I mean, probably nobody. I mean the sort of man who would watch it and identify with Roger Sterling was, I have a real soft spot for him, but I don't think I've ever met a man who would self consciously identify with him when watching the programme. But
if anyone does,
of course,
let us know.
No judgment. But yes, I think there is a certain type of woman who fiercely identifies with Peggy Olsen, and I am definitely that sort of woman.
I used to have Peggy's when I first joined Twitter, which is, I was an early adopter.
Mm-hmm.
I had Peggy's face as my avatar for a long time. I think actually she used to be, this might not be necessarily true anymore, but she used to be the person people said I looked like. So it made sense for a while. I actually had colleagues who weren't sure that whether it was me or Peggy.
Well, of course, we also have her for our TNK, at TNK pod avatar is Peggy Olsen.
Yes, anywhere we have an avatar, it's Peggy Olsen.
And a particularly iconic Peggy Olsen scene.
Mm.
Which is the moment when she's walking back into the offices of, I think by that point, McCann Erickson.
I think so,
McCann Erickson by that point, carrying the octopus hentai picture that Bert has left her under her arm, that she's stolen from Bert's
Roger Sterling died,
with a box full of her possessions, with a cigarette in her mouth and sunglasses on. Drunk in the afternoon after drinking vermouth or something all afternoon.
Something like that.
Which is, you know, everything I aspire to and more.
It's the attitude I take normally in the office. This is why I've never been sexually harassed in the office. When did you watch Mad Men?
So we watched, me and my partner watched it together. I started watching the first series whenever it started being on BBC.
Okay.
It was on BBC Four for a while, and they had it for four series, I think, and then they lost it. Mm. The BBC lost it halfway through, and then we stopped, and I only quite recently rewatched it, so I actually only finished watching it this year.
Oh.
And we started from the beginning of series five, which is the terribly embarrassing birthday party for Dom when Megan sings Zuzu Bazoo. And does the dance. So that was my kind of re-entry into Mad Men, and I watched it from there until the end.
Okay. I watched it when it was on BBC Four, so when it was first broadcast. I kind of missed the first few episodes. The first ever episode I watched was the one where someone outs Don on a train.
Mm-hmm.
He's on the train to Manhattan, and someone comes and sits next to him and calls him Dick, and starts talking about, he obviously doesn't know about the Korean War and everything that's happened since. So, and I thought then that I'd sort of spoil the whole series, that I was meant to not have seen that. But it turns out that it's the opposite. You know from the start that Don's not exactly who he's telling people that he is.
It's an interesting, it is quite interesting as an approach to storytelling that most of the kind of secrets in Mad Men, the viewer knows from the beginning.
Mm.
Like, you're watching it knowing, you know, there's not actually many twists. You know that Don is a dick. You find out that Peggy is pregnant basically when Peggy finds out Peggy is pregnant, which is late. Mm. But, you know, it's not like this is kind of a secret that's revealed to you. And so you're not really waiting for twists in the same way that you are with some TV programs. You're more waiting for characters to discover things, for characters to find things
I
out.
Thought that was really nicely done about Peggy. And this is where I have a really creepy stat that I've been desperate to share for episodes and episodes. So there's a academic, a historian at Helsinki University called mm-hmm. Mona Rautelin, and she researches the history of cryptic pregnancies.
Oh yeah.
And she calls them cryptic pregnancies because they are the medically defined condition denial of pregnancy. So when mm-hmm. people don't actually know that they're pregnant.
Right.
And we constantly hear stories about it, right? And mm-hmm. Peggy's definitely one of those where you, someone who realizes that she's pregnant when she's in labor. And mm-hmm. we all think this is ridiculous. How could you not know that you're pregnant? And mm-hmm. those of us who have been pregnant and have felt it very early on mm-hmm. In various ways will always be a little bit skeptical. But it's actually a lot more common than you think. So Mona has published in the Social History of Medicine about this, and I'll put a link to it in our mm-hmm. show notes. But it's basically, it has an occurrence rate of 1 in 2,500 pregnancies.
Oh my God.
I know, right? That's a live birth. Obviously, there's a lot of women who lose babies in pregnancies that they don't know that they're losing. They don't know that they're losing the baby, or they don't know that they've been pregnant, but the baby doesn't make it so long. Mm-hmm. But 1 in every 2,500 live births is someone who was unaware of their pregnancy.
Oh my God.
That is a lot of pregnancies out there.
That's a lot of pregnancies. That's absolutely terrifying.
I had a really, I think at St. Thomas's in London where I gave birth, they mm-hmm. have something like 5,000 babies born every year. So two of them will be unawares. I think one of them happened a few days before I gave birth there, but...
I mean, that storyline... So, we probably should have said at the beginning of this episode, there's going to be a lot of spoilers in this.
Oh, yes.
Just continual spoilers. But that the storyline of Peggy becoming pregnant, so her having sex with Pete, which I always interpreted as being kind of not totally consensual sex with him. It didn't feel like... It felt quite awkward, slightly odd kind of sexual encounter with Pete Campbell. But her pregnancy...
Yeah.
And then her kind of her confinement after her pregnancy when she's given the baby up, and Don coming to see her and saying, it will shock you how much this never happened, giving her a kind of pep talk. I think it's handled...
The worst pep talk in the world, but it worked.
Yeah, exactly. A pep talk which is what she needs to hear, right? A pep talk. Which
kind and of it speaks to his generation as well, that you drink, you don't talk.
About silences and forgetting. But the storyline, I think one of the reasons that Mad Men is so compelling to me is because that storyline of her baby kind of comes up at different points and different moments. You know, there are moments throughout the rest of the series where Peggy has to interact with children and either finds it difficult, she's not very maternal, or has a kind of wistfulness about it.
Yeah.
There's obviously, there are moments of her interacting with Pete, which are really interesting.
Particularly after he knows,
after
which
he
only
finds
happens.
Out, which happens quite late. And actually their kind of friendship, which comes, you know, by the end, by the point at the end of the final series where Pete's leaving, you know, it's very much, there's very much a sense that they're actually friends, and they're friends in a way that would have been impossible if she had been an actual conquest of his.
Yeah.
That there has to be a different type of relationship, they have this thing in common. But then, of course, it also comes up in her conversation with Stan, after Peggy has had to interact with a child in an advert shoot, she has a conversation with Stan about, you know, he says, actually quite alarmingly, because she's just turned 30, and he says, you know, of course you've left it too late to have children now, which is fairly horrifying and alarming. But, you know...
He gets a bit more woke later.
Yes, but they have that... Well, I mean, this is quite towards the end, but they have that conversation about... where she reveals essentially that she's had the baby, and he's very sympathetic to her. And I like the way that it's part of her storyline all the way through, but it's, again, it doesn't make her into a tragic figure. It's just something that she's dealt with. It's just something that's happened to her, which I think is good. I mean,
I was thinking about her, Stan, and the pregnancy yesterday, because I watched the episode where they undress.
Mm-hmm.
They really don't get on. Is this season 3 or 4, maybe? I have this tendency with my partner to just... you know, watch a random episode of Mad Men. Mm-hmm. We just start anywhere. So I don't know whether it's season 3 or 4, but Stan is completely new. He's just walked in this season, and he absolutely hates Peggy and vice versa.
Yeah.
And he constantly talks about nudism and that he needs to work naked and stuff.
Yeah, he tries to intimidate her.
Yeah, and it doesn't work. She undresses in the hotel room and sits down to work, and he can't concentrate. And I thought that was quite interesting, because the way she looked when she was pregnant, she must have had lasting stretch marks.
Mm-hmm.
So if he had any clue, then he would probably have guessed that there would have been something
that happened.
Well,
not everyone gets stretch marks.
Not everyone, but yeah.
I really like that scene because, again, it's a scene of Peggy's kind of power. And you know,
power and triumph.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, so one of the things for me about Mad Men is that I kind of understand that on one level it's supposed to be a series about Don.
Mm.
I get that's, you know, the sort of dynamic of it is about him and his relationships and his workplace and his journey and his hidden past and his family and his wife and his children. But for me, it was always a show about Peggy. Mm. It's a show about, you know, in the first series, Peggy comes in as a secretary. She has to battle huge amounts of workplace sexism and harassment. She gets hired on her own merit as a copywriter. Mm. She has this professional
Thank
career.
Thank you, Freddie Rumsen.
Yes. She has a professional career. She has relationships, many of which are unsuccessful, like most people. She stabs one of her boyfriends with a bayonet.
Oh, Abe.
I hated Abe.
I quite liked Abe, but he became such a whiny person towards the end.
He was just so irritating. But, you know, and then at the end of it, she, you know, it's implied very much she's going off into, she's going to kind of have a very strong career. She has a relationship, finally, with someone who considers her an equal, like a creative partnership. She gets fulfillment. In right at the end, you know, when Don's gone off to California, he rings Peggy and talks to Peggy, you know, after he's disappeared from the agency, he rings her and talks to her, and this brings some sort of closure to their relationship. Like, I always thought it was a show about her. And so I've known people who've tried to watch it, have come to it later and have found it, you know, I think also particularly the first series or the first couple of series have been really perturbed by the focus on these kind of masculine characters and the sexism, and have seen it as a kind of sexist program. And for me, it was always a program about those things, not a program that pushed those things, because I thought it was a program about her.
Yes, it's been a program about how, well, women make space for themselves in public and private life, but also the kind of constant negotiation that had to go on. Why Joan, who is a few years older than Peggy, why she is the way she is.
Yeah.
How she goes from... I also watched a bit of the first season the other day, having watched the last season, and the difference in the way that Joan acts and her power. I actually think it's in the last season there is a flashback to when Roger and Joan have a relationship very early on. It's before Don comes to the advertising game and stuff. And it kind of really shows the difference.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not just that Peggy arrives as this very bright-eyed, naive person who's had a very sheltered religious upbringing, but and then transforms into this smoking space taker. But Joan also goes through a similar transformation, only she negotiates the space in a slightly different way. She still has different modes of operation that Peggy doesn't agree with, but they become allies.
They do. And at the end, they have the opportunity. You know, Joan reaches out to Peggy to ask her to go into business, and Peggy ultimately says no. But I like to think that you see Joan kind of starting her new business. I like to think that wouldn't have fractured that alliance. That that's not kind of friendship ending, because ultimately Joan and Peggy, like, there is a really lovely moment actually when the agencies remerge in the fifth or sixth series, and so Joan and Peggy are working together again, and there's this moment where they're very happy to see each other. And you would never have been able to pick that earlier, because earlier the dynamic is very much that, you know, Joan is a woman who does not have female friends.
Yes. The first thing she does is send Peggy to the doctor so she can get contraception and not get pregnant by the men in the office.
It's a really it's a really, really conscious crafting of that type of woman who has power by allying herself with the men. And also by playing a game based on, you know, incredible kind of looks and her ability. You know, we talked a few episodes ago about the kind of the power of makeup, the power of image. You know, Joan's incredible figure, her kind of dress sense and everything, the way that she's able to manipulate.
She says in one episode that she was brought up to be admired.
Yes, my mother brought me up to be admired. There's a beautiful counterpoint to that, again, quite early, I think after she's met her horrible rapist husband, where at the end,
Greg, may he never come back from Vietnam.
But at the end of one of the episodes, where she sits on a bed and she takes off her bra and she rubs the top of her shoulder where the strap must have been digging in all day. And I think women are watching that, you know, that moment where you take off your bra at the end of the day is always very satisfying. But also that sort of understanding of of the cost of her figure and her clothes and things. Mm. She must be uncomfortable and tired, and that kind of moment.
Those tight pencil skirts that she walks around in.
And the cone bras. But that moment where she takes off her bra and squeezes her shoulder, I think was very... And then, of course, you know...
Charlotte is squeezing her shoulder as she speaks.
in empathy. And, of course, with Joan, you know, one of the very, very important kind of gendered storylines is the moment where she's going to sleep with the Jaguar executive. And Don is the only one who tries to stop her from doing this, and he doesn't realise, I don't think he ever realises, that he comes too late.
Mm.
So he thinks that he's come to tell her she doesn't have to do it and that she's ignored his advice.
Yeah.
And this is really difficult. This is a real kind of moment, a sticking point in their relationship. But what he doesn't realise is he's come too late to tell her, and I think the implication is she didn't really think she did have a choice.
Mm.
But that also she's making a choice because she wants the money.
She wants a partnership.
And that's why... And she wants recognition.
Mm.
She wants proper recognition for the work she does.
And after that, she's sort of, you know, it's that...
Yeah.
She moves up the ladder very Absolutely. Quickly.
But then again, you know...
But her relationship with Don never really recovers.
Particularly after he throws away Jaguar. And because he thinks she made this sort of choice against his wishes. It's very complicated.
He also says in the final season at one point that every time they get a car, this becomes a whorehouse, which is, you know, pretty offensive language. But it's a quote from him, and I think that, you know, it speaks to Don's history as much as it does to his... There are several... I mean, this is one of the areas that's quite murky in Mad Men, that they do visit sex workers a lot, and the sex industry is quite present. But Don sits there and doesn't...
Yeah, Don has engage,
and he sort of knows... He's an ally of the women in those places. Despite the fact that he's an incredibly, you know, like, misogynist and philanderer. He doesn't treat women very well, but he sort of somehow sympathises or is an ally with the women working at the bottom of the game.
I think often he is... I do find him interesting as a character in that he's a terrible man in many ways, but he's an ally to... I suppose the answer is he's an ally to specific women. He's an ally to Peggy almost always, right? And
apart from the money and
stuff. Apart from the moments over the money, there's that... Yeah, the kind of... But it's interesting. I suppose the point with Don is that he often does not really see women as people with interior lives. He sees women as people with whom he can have sex, or people, you know, women who can distract him from the terrible... problems that he has to deal with, and that kind of a few weeks
ago. It's whiskey and women.
Yes, exactly. And when women become actual people, then he interacts with them in a much more interesting way. So Peggy, and actually to some extent Betty, she has after they divorce.
Yeah,
he has a different relationship to her once she's a person and not just his wife. Which again, you know, could I suppose be read as a broader allegory.
And he does have a problem with Megan when she starts to become a person rather than being the wife.
Yeah, definitely.
And she moves out of, she moves out of the state, but she also moves out of the agency, and she moves out of being that kind of, the person she is when she first appears in Mad Men is this very kind of proper, coiffed secretary, and she becomes this Hollywood wild child.
One of the most touching moments actually in Mad Men is the moment when he, you know, when he has the very kind of elderly and dour secretary Ida.
Oh yeah.
And she dies at her
Blankenship.
Desk. Ida Blankenship, and you know, because Don can't be trusted with young pretty girls, he's given this secretary. And the moment where she dies at the desk, and everyone's sort of, you know, and everyone's talking about it, but being quite flippant. And then Bert Cooper, who is, you know, in many ways very problematic, gets more problematic as the series go on.
Oh my God, yeah.
But has that really beautiful moment when he says that she was an astronaut. She was born in the 19th century, and she died on the top floor of a skyscraper.
Mm.
And you know, that's a moment I often come back to when I'm thinking about Mad Men, because it's this idea of what progress really means.
Mm.
And for women specifically. And again, like, you know, this is one of the reasons I think that historians love Mad Men, is because it's incredibly historically literate, not just in terms of the images, although, you know, the props and costumes and things are fantastic.
Although I have a caveat there from my partner, who works in graphic design, that a lot of the papers and stuff look old.
Mm.
when they are meant to be contemporary, there's they look
really,
old.
There's a really interesting article about this that I read, which we can put on our show notes, which is about how that's a real issue for people who set dress for kind of programmes that are set in the past.
Oh.
That audiences are incredibly resistant to seeing things that are new if they're in the past, because our relationship to the past is really complicated and we forget that things in the past were modern.
So basically what we need in order for that to change is for everyone to become a picky graphic designer.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Or, you know, a historian, in fact. but yes, I think, you know, there are the moments in Mad Men where female agency is particularly... And I think, you know, in a way, Mad Men has a... It's funny, it's become a kind of an internet phenomenon, both in terms of the way it was watched, so not necessarily people live tweeting it, but very much with the sense of huge amounts of column inches on the internet devoted to talking about it, right? It
was also, when I first joined Twitter, there were characters, Mad Men characters on Twitter.
This sort of, they, you know, people...
Which was a sort of fan... thing. It was not to do with Mad Men itself, but that was quite interesting. They were interacting with each other, and it became this sort of space outside of the series.
But this kind of, you know, obviously, you know, you can be very snobby about television and like Mad Men. It's something that people have. It's one of those programs it's okay to like, which I find really problematic. I think, you know, Gossip Girl is just as good as Mad Men, in some ways, obviously not in others. But the it's kind of had a life of its own in GIFs in particular, and the women I know who use Mad Men GIFs pretty much use, there's like four or five that you use all of the time. So there's the
when
one
you say you do, you mean me.
We women, there's you know, because there are these moments that have become iconic, I think, again, in the way that women, I don't know, something about the way that women identify with it. So for example, the moment when Peggy and Joan are in the lift.
Oh, yeah.
And Peggy turns to Joan. They've had a disastrous meeting, which was full of men being incredible sexists. And Peggy says to Joan, do you want to go and get some lunch? And Joan says, I want to burn this place down.
Mm.
And, you know, that has become shorthand for women experiencing sexism or women railing against the patriarchy. That is, you know, a go-to thing.
It's a bit of sisterhood as well.
It is. It's sisterhood. Though, actually, only in that specific moment, because actually in the scene they then have this huge argument and Peggy storms off, and Peggy says, I thought that's how you got your power, you know, referring to Joan having had sex with the Jaguar exec. There's also, I have a gift that I really love, which is Peggy talking to the married man who, the ad executive, I've forgotten his name.
Ken Cosgrove?
Ted Shaw.
Oh, Ted Shaw.
And he talking about, you know, his terrible choice about choosing between his wife and his and Peggy, and he's talking about what a difficult decision it is, and she says, aren't you lucky to have decisions?
Mm.
And it's one of my favorite kind of, again, this kind of moment of a woman railing against her lack of agency in that particular space.
That's an excellent, I mean, we use the Dazzle Me Peggy gif on our subscription page, so if you haven't subscribed to the podcast yet and you want to, you get to see a bit of Mad Men gif there.
There's also this doesn't have a particular feminist bent, but her roller skating in the empty office is one of my favourites.
Oh yeah,
it's I have great. Very little to do, you know, I don't necessarily need to use it very often, but when I do, it's always a triumph.
We actually did a test each, so we started this episode by saying that we could have a fist fight over who is the most Peggy, but we did the BuzzFeed, which Mad Men character are you? I think it's from 2014. Shall we reveal the results?
Yes.
So you've done it twice.
I've done it twice because I did it once, forgot I'd done it, did it again and got two different choices.
Oh, wow.
Which I think says something about my state of mind at the two times I was taking the test. And I think I know what answer it hinged on as well.
Okay. So who did you get?
So the first time I did it, I came out as Roger Sterling.
Oh, wow!
which is why I was saying there's no judgment if you identify with him.
Obviously, Charlotte was drunk when she took that test, and she had just spewed in front of her colleagues.
So, I think it was because when I was asked to identify an attribute that I thought was important, I said being charming.
Oh, he is very charming.
And he is. I absolutely love Roger Sterling. He's one of my favourite characters. I find it very hard to have any ill will towards him.
Mm.
When I did it the second time, I came out as Peggy.
Oh, interesting.
Because I said that I said something like conscientious.
Yeah.
Which is such an example of that kind of, those kind of gendered identity attributes. Who were you?
Don. Which I think says something about me picking whiskey cocktails. But it's
having a secret life, of course.
Having a secret life, of course. I mean, there are speculation among my group of friends that I'm actually a spy, which I'm not going to refute here. But it says, so the description is, how else can we say it? You're an alpha dog at the top of the food chain. You are cool under pressure, but bring an electric passion to everything you pursue. You'll do whatever it takes to win, and then some. Now go and pour yourself an old-fashioned.
Yeah, Roger Sterling says, don't stop chattering, your charm is your biggest weapon. But, you know, chattering actually is a very feminine way of writing about that, isn't it?
Yeah.
What's your favourite Mad Men episode, then?
It's so my favourite episode is The Crash. Mm-hmm. It's season 6, episode 8. It's the one where they all do speed, I suppose. Mm-hmm. I think, yeah. So they all have to work throughout the night, and they end up working throughout the weekend, and they're all doing drugs. Don isn't that great in that episode. He just has his pretty boring flashbacks to the house he grew up in.
He blacks out.
Yeah, and it's when he has an affair with Mrs. Rosen, who's also not my favourite character. But Ken Cosgrove, who I love, does his tap dancing.
Cosgrove tap dancing is one of the best scenes in Mad Men.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting one for Peggy being a part as well, because she doesn't get the shot, does she?
She doesn't get the shot. She drinks a bit, I think. But she just sits there, and all these men are just playing around. And what's his name? Michael...
Oh, Ginsberg.
Ginsberg.
Cuts his nipple off.
He doesn't do it in that episode. But so Michael Ginsberg also doesn't drink, and he doesn't take... Yeah, the drugs, but he's still acting quite strange, as he will continue to.
It's such a
and
good
I feel
episode.
Like he's I. Ginsberg is one of my favorite characters. Mm-hmm. Dan is another one of my favorite characters. Mm-hmm. Ken Cosgrove. I also quite like Ted Shaw.
Oh, I hate Ted Shaw.
You're very much like Don there.
My favorite episode. I have a favorite episode and a favorite scene, and they come from different ones. So my favorite episode is the suitcase. Which is when Peggy and Don spend all night together on the Samsonite Commission. Partly because it's just so good in showing that relationship. It's so good in showing... You know, there are moments in Mad Men where, for a brief horrible moment as a viewer, you think that Peggy and Don might kiss.
Mm.
And obviously it never happens because that's not the relationship. So there's a moment later when they dance to My Way. Mm. And there's that horrible moment where it's like, oh God, is something going to happen? No, okay, it's not. And obviously the suitcase, it's this kind of... this ridiculous long night of this like platonic relationship between them, and at the end Don finds out that Anna has died, and he says, she's the only one who ever knew me, and Peggy says that's not true. And it's this important moment in cementing their friendship. It also has one of my favorite lines in it, which is when Peggy is railing at Don for not being sufficiently grateful for her work, and she says, you never say thank you, and he says, that's what the money is for. My favorite scene in Mad Men is the moment at the end of series 4 when Don announces that he's getting engaged to Megan, and where Peggy appears in Joan's office.
Yeah.
And she appears in the door, and Joan says, whatever could you be angry about? And she sits down, and she's so angry about it. She's so angry that she thinks Megan will have to be promoted to copywriter because Don couldn't be married to a secretary.
Mm.
And Joan says, but you know they're all only between marriages.
Mm.
And they're just such good sort of moments, I think, in Mad Men that make me very happy.
Yeah, there are so many moments like that. I think we should probably end here, but do you have a poem?
I do have a poem. It's a poem by Leo Umansky, who's written a book of poems about Mad Men called Excellent. Don Dreams and I Dream. And this is from a poem called The Times, and it's about the moment when Don puts the Revolver LP on.
Oh, yes.
Which is also, another connection between this podcast and Mad Men, which is that it's called Tomorrow Never Knows, which is an important moment in Mad Men. But it's about Don and being a woman watching Mad Men. And she says, I thought I'd hate Don like everyone else, but I don't. But the moment, the bits of this I really like, is at one point she says, Don can't plead with Joan. She's a woman who's ready to kill her darlings.
Uh-huh.
Which is a nice shifting of that. A nice shifting of that kind of narrative. But there's also, it's such a good poem and everyone should read it. It's this really great sort of mediation on the relationship between Peggy and Don. And at the end it says, Peggy resists all the cliches and wraps herself in strength. She takes Don on in the way that children learn how to fight back tears. This is tough love at its finest. It's a man's world, but not for all of us.
Excellent.
Which is a nice sort of way to think about it.
Well, we'll put a link to that and our favourite episodes, which are going to be our recommendations for this episode. We'll put all of those in our show notes. I like to call them footnotes.
Yes, that's absolutely.
My inner historian. And we shall be back in the new year with episodes to do with celebrity.
Yep, celebrity, perhaps. Female friendship. We've got lots of things coming up.
Next episode, we're going to talk a lot more specifically about women's particular bodies and health. We're going to be talking about hormones.
Yes.
Pregnancy. I think there might be a bit of Beyonce in there, potentially.
I'm sure there will be.
And we, as always, want to hear from you and want to know if anyone wants to contribute. You can call in. You can come and sit at my kitchen table where we do these recordings.
Yes.
And you can talk to us mostly via Twitter seems to work best for everyone.
Yes.
Charlotte's going to have to read it out because I can't do it.
At TNKPods. And you can find links to our personal Twitter accounts there as well. And if you are listening to the podcast, please do sign up for the newsletter where you get the show notes because you get all of our citations, but you can also respond to that.
Yes. And we wish you all a very Merry Christmas.
A Happy New Year.
A Happy New Year and many Mad Men gifts, as many as you want.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye.